Lost Horizon by James Hilton. Geoffrey Matthews reads the final episode.
Towards dawn, Conway and Mallinson passed unchallenged by sentinels through the valley below Shangri-La. Presently they reached a plateau beyond, picked clean as a bone by roaring winds, and after a gradual descent, the encampment of porters came in sight. Then, all was as Mallinson had foretold. They found the men ready for them, sturdy fellows in furs and sheepskins, crouching under the gale, and eager to begin the journey to Ta Chien Phu, 1,100 miles eastward on the China border. When they met Lord Sen, Mallinson said,
"Conway is coming with us,"
forgetting that she knew no English. But Conway translated. It seemed to him that the little Manchu woman had never looked so radiant. She gave him a most charming smile, but her eyes were all for the boy. And it was at this point that the manuscript I was reading, the manuscript that Rutherford had given me, came to an end. I had intended to return it to him as soon as I had read it, but I had already received a short note from him to say that he was off on his wanderings again and would have no settled address for some months. It was in Delhi that I met Rutherford again. We had been guests at a viceregal dinner party, but distance and ceremonial kept us apart until the turbaned flunkies handed us our hats afterwards.
"Come back to my hotel. Have a drink," Rutherford said.
Over a whiskey, I asked him where he'd been. "Searching for Conway," I said.
"Search is much too strong a word. You can't search a country half as big as Europe for one man. All I can say is that I visited places where I was prepared to come across him or get news of him. His last message, you remember, was that he had left Bangkok on a long journey. I knew that it was to the northwest, and I was able to follow him some way. But the definite trail, as you might say, peters out somewhere in Upper Siam. But I was also interested to put as many tabs on Conway's story as I could. Altogether, I must have done some thousands of miles. Baskul, Bangkok, Chungkyang, Kashgar. I visited them all, and somewhere inside the area between them the mystery lies. But it's a pretty big area, you know, and all my investigations didn't touch more than the fringe of it, or of the mystery, either, I admit, huh? Indeed, if you want the actual downright facts about Conway's adventures, so far as I've been able to verify them, all I can tell you is that he left Baskul on the 20th of May and arrived in Chungkyang on the 5th of October. And the last we know of him is that he left Bangkok again on the 3rd of February. All the rest, everything he told me, everything I wrote down in that manuscript, is probability, possibility, guesswork, myth, legend, whatever you like to call it.
But did you discover nothing definite at Baskul? I said.
Oh, Baskul was hopeless, said Rutherford. Peshawar was worse. Nobody could tell me anything except that the kidnapping of the people in that aeroplane did undoubtedly take place. Nobody's keen even to admit that, of course. It's an episode they're not proud of.
And nothing was heard of the plane afterwards.
Not a word or a rumour, or of its four passengers either. I verified, however, that it was a type capable of climbing high enough to cross the ranges. I also tried to trace that fellow Barnard. I found his past history so mysterious that I wouldn't be at all surprised if he really were Chalmers Bryant, as Conway said.
Did you try to find anything about the actual kidnapper? I asked.
I did, but again it was hopeless.
And did you try tracing the history of some of the people that Conway mentioned?
I made an attempt, but it's a pity I hadn't a longer list to work on. I couldn't find any record of a pupil of Chopin's called Briac, Though, of course, that doesn't prove that there wasn't one. Conway was pretty sparing with his names, when you come to think about it. Out of 50-odd llamas supposed to be on the premises, he only gave us one or two. Pero and Henschel, by the way, proved equally impossible to trace.
How about Mallinson? I said. Did you try to find out what happened to him? And that girl, the Chinese girl.
Oh, my dear fellow, of course I did. The awkward part was, as you perhaps gathered from the manuscript, that Conway's story ended at the moment of leaving the valley with the porters. After that, he either couldn't or would not tell me what had happened. Perhaps he might have done, mind you, if there'd been more time. I feel that we can guess at some sort of tragedy. The hardships of the journey would be perfectly appalling, apart from the risk of brigandage or even treachery among their own escorting party. Probably we shall never know exactly what did occur, but it seems tolerably certain that Mallinson never reached China. I made all sorts of inquiries, you know. There was absolutely no record of Conway's party arriving at all.
So how Conway himself reached Chongqing is still unexplained, I said.
The only conclusion, said Rutherford, is that he wandered there, just as he might have wandered anywhere else. Anyway, we're back in the realm of hard facts when we get to Chongqing, eh? That's something. The nuns at the mission hospital were genuine enough, and so for the matter was the excitement of that pianist, Sievking, when Conway played that pseudo-Chopin on the ship.
Rutherford paused.
Yeah. It's really an exercise in the balancing of probabilities, and I must say the scales don't bump very emphatically either way. Of course, if you don't accept Conway's story, it means that you doubt either his veracity or his sanity. One might as well be frank.
He paused again, and I said, as you know, I never saw him after the war, but I understand he was a good deal changed by it.
Yes. Yes, he certainly was. Well, there is no denying the fact. People would say, I suppose, that he came through without a scratch. But the scratches were there, on the inside.
So that's where we must leave it, I said.
Well, yes. Except for just one more point that I must mention, and perhaps in some ways it's the oddest of all. It came out during my inquiries at the mission. They all did their best for me there, as you can guess, but they couldn't recollect much, especially as they'd been so busy with a fever epidemic at the time. One of the questions I put was about the manner Conway had reached the hospital first of all, whether he had presented himself alone or had been found ill and been taken there by somebody else. I couldn't exactly remember. After all, it was a long while back. But suddenly, when I was on the point of giving up the cross-examination, one of the nuns remarked quite casually, I think the doctor said he was brought here by a woman. Ah, that was all she could tell me. And as the doctor himself had left the mission, there was no confirmation to be had on the spot. But having got so far, I wasn't in any mood to give up. It appeared that the doctor had gone to a bigger hospital in Shanghai, so I took the trouble to get his address and call on him there. I'd met the man before, of course, during my first visit to Chongqing, and he was very polite, though terribly overworked. He took me to one side in the crowded hospital ward, and I asked him about Conway. There wasn't a moment's hesitation.
Oh, yes, he said. I remember the case of the Englishman who had lost his memory. I remember it very well.
And was it true that he had been brought to the mission by a woman? I said. One of the nuns told me you just said so. Oh, yes, certainly, he said. By a woman. A Chinese woman. Do you remember anything about her? I said. He lifted his arms. Nothing, I'm afraid, except that she'd been ill of the fever herself, and
died almost immediately.
Well, just then there was an interruption. A batch of sick were carried in and packed on stretchers in the corridors. The wards were all full, and I didn't care to go on taking up the man's time. And when he came back to me looking quite cheerful amid such ghastliness, I just asked him one final question. And I dare say you can guess what that was. "About that Chinese woman," I said. "Was she young?" Rutherford flicked his cigar as if the narration had excited him quite as much as he hoped it had me. And then he went on. "The little fellow looked at me solemnly for a moment, and then he answered, 'Oh, no. She was most old. Most old of anyone I have ever seen.'"
We sat for a long time in silence, and then talked again of Conway as I remembered him, boyish and gifted and full of charm, and of so many mysteries of time and age and of the mind, and of the little Manchu woman who had been most old, and of the strange, ultimate dream of Shangri-La. At length I looked across at Rutherford. "Do you think he will ever find it?" I asked.
That was the final episode of Lost Horizon by James Hilton. It was read by Geoffrey Matthews, and production for the BBC was by John Cardiff.